We're about to start within 1 minute or so. I guess we are ready. So, dear colleagues, my name is Lucie Potučková from Czech Republic. I'm the chair of the OECD Parliamentary Assembly of the Committee on Democracy, Human Rights and Humanitarian Questions. It will be very difficult for me to follow after Gudrun in moderating the discussion because she was brilliant and I thank her for her inspiration how to do that because this is my first moderated session. So wish me luck. Now, let's start. Distinguished guest speakers, fellow parliamentarians, dear colleagues, First of all, I echo the previous speakers in warmly thanking the Portuguese Parliament for generously hosting this timely conference. Today we engage in an important discussion centered around the theme protecting democracy and promoting development through artificial intelligence. We have four speakers in our list. We must be very effective because I think this will be a really interesting and important topic. I will introduce each speaker continuously before each of her or his speech. And first of all, I start with my introductory speech and then I give a floor to our speakers. It is with great pleasure that I kickstart our next panel discussion, recognizing the vital role that technological advancements driven by artificial intelligence play in shaping democracy and democratic processes. I would like to begin with a quote from renowned theoretical physicist Stephen Hawking. Success in creating AI would be the biggest event in human history. Unfortunately, it might also be the last, unless we learn how to avoid the risks. We are all acutely aware of the multifaceted nature of AI, its potential to enhance democratic processes, as well as the challenges it presents. In this regard, I am delighted to welcome our guest speakers, whose insights and expertise will provide us with greater understanding of the complexities of this important topic and foster meaningful debates among us. Dear colleagues, artificial intelligence can hold immense potential to enhance democratic processes, as it offers us a wide variety of tools for more efficient governance, improved decision-making, and stronger citizen engagement. For instance, AI can serve to streamline bureaucratic processes, making government operation more efficient and transparent. AI-powered analytics can provide us policymakers with vast amounts of data that can aid evidence-based policymaking and facilitate more informed decision-making. AI can also help us navigate the complex maze of legal regulations and identify duplicates and obsolete legislation, which I, as a legislator, really appreciate. Citizen participation can be bolstered through AI technologies as people can engage through digital platforms with their elected representatives, contributing to more inclusive and responsive governance. And AI can be leveraged in various ways to enhance civic education and promote media literacy, fostering a more informed electorate. Evidently, AI holds great promises, but it also brings significant challenges. One major concern is how it could worsen existing inequalities and deepen societal divides. As AI systems are developed and put into action, there is a real risk of them carrying forward biases ingrained in data they are trained on, which can lead to greater social inequalities. AI can excel at influencing the human mind and manipulating public opinion, particularly political campaigns during election procedures. Moreover, the way AI algorithms work can be quite secretive, making it hard to hold anyone accountable and transparent, which is crucial for democratic principles. The rise of AI-powered surveillance technologies is equally alarming. Governments and big companies are increasingly using AI to monitor people on a large scale, which has raised serious questions pertaining to privacy and civil liberties. Colleagues, given these highly complex dynamics, our role as parliamentarians, especially within international fora, is crucial. We bear the responsibility to understand the intricacies of AI technologies and their implications for human rights and democracy, particularly for the constituents we represent. It is imperative, therefore, that we remain actively engaged in informed discussions and collaborative efforts at the international level, as we are gathered here in Lisbon today. Our third committee on democracy, human rights, and humanitarian questions has also considered the implications of AI. This critical matter will be addressed in the forthcoming resolution of the committee, which will be up for the adoption at the upcoming Bucharest annual session. This only underscores the significance we are placing on addressing the impact of AI on our democratic principles and human rights. On a concluding note, let me once again reiterate that it is vital that we continue to engage in informed dialogue and collaboration at the international level. This is especially crucial given the transnational nature of AI's impact and the necessity for international cooperation. By doing so, we can collectively shape policies that promote the responsible development and deployment of AI, develop AI risk frameworks, and establish a platform for global interoperability between jurisdictions, all while safeguarding democratic principles. Thank you very much. And with this said, I'm happy to introduce our speakers. So let's start with Dr. Sarah Speakerman. She is the chair of the Institute. Let me introduce your short bio. Is the chair of the Institute for Information Systems and Society at Vienna, University of Economics and Business, since 2009. She is a well-regarded scientist, author, speaker, and advisor on digital ethics, and she has co-authored US-EU privacy regulation and worked as an expert and advisor to companies and governmental institutions, including the EU Commission and the OECD. Thank you very much, Sarah, for accepting the invitation and to be here with us. Please, the floor is yours.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'm concerned. I'm concerned that the debate about AI and its security impacts stays with anecdotes and examples, deepfake, perhaps something like that, or futuristic potentials that to me as a scientist sound a little bit like a fictionary reading of scientific results. At the same time, I think what we really miss is, in all of this complexity, a really sound situational analysis. And I would like to present you a quote from the Chinese philosopher, war philosopher, Sun Tzu. The general who wins a battle makes many calculations in his temple before the battle is fought. The general who loses a battle makes few calculations beforehand, or perhaps just looks at a few examples. Thus, many calculations lead to victory and few calculations to defeat. It is by attention to this point that I can foresee who is likely to win and to lose. I'm just wondering, has anyone ever done a proper situational analysis of the security threat coming from AI? And done that against the background of what security actually is, which is the inability of AI systems to affect nations, organizations, and individuals in an undesirable way. The first questions that I think should be asked, and I'm wondering who asks them, is, first of all, who are actually the generals here? Who are the attacking originators that affect whom? Who's the target? Is it indeed specifically nations, organizations, individuals? And what kind of effect are we actually talking about? And what can we do about this would then be a nice answer to have. I think these questions should be pretty obvious, and still the questions we ask is to what extent a deep fake may be possible, and perhaps whether we can compromise the integrity of a large language model. So what is really important, and one thing that concerns me, is why? Why do we actually not ask those absolutely obvious questions? Why do we stick with a lot of propaganda? And this is going to be a major aspect of my talk. But of course, if I have to speak about AI security, what do I mean by AI anyways? And let me discern here, a little bit in line with my pre-speakers, two kinds of AIs, which I coin the influencer AIs and the autonomous actuators. The influencer AIs are the massive AI-based influencer machinery evolving around and being turboed by large language models, but they also drive, most importantly, social media. The second kind of AI are autonomous actuators. For example, the AI-based weapon platform called Lavendel, used in Gaza to calculate the likelihood of a man being a part of Hamas, and then killing everyone around this person with another AI called Where is Daddy? I tend to say I would rather want to focus now on the influencers AI. The military forces must debate, of course, the degree of autonomous function allocation in weapon systems and deal with the security threat fueled by the use of such weapons or autonomous actuators. Because the use of such AIs, autonomous actuators, is just one aspect of the drama, the very big challenge comes from this David against Goliath story being literally pushed in across the internet to millions and billions of radicalizing internet accounts. In other words, I see as much of a threat coming from the massive AI-driven influence machinery that was born years ago. We must not forget that our first contact with AI, as a massive contact with AI, was really when social media was born. First contact was when social media and so-called personalized data management platforms started to allow any entity to simply pay for what it wants to be spread massively through the internet, potentially supported by billions of fake accounts. So I just want to give you a notion of the numbers here. On data management platforms, every single one of us in this room would be characterized on the basis of at least 60,000 attributes that are updated in real time. And this personalization and automated engine is then used to drive internet and social media traffic, but not real people initially, but fake accounts. And let me give you a number of the fake accounts. The Meta Transparency Report of last year reported that alone on Facebook, Meta had to delete 1 billion fake accounts a quarter. So what we actually see happening is that we have a massive influencing AI machinery that drives all of our own attention. Influencer AIs have knowingly supported the election of Donald Trump, the Brexit, and many of the colorful revolutions we are seeing across the globe. Yeah? They, I believe, drive massive footfall on our streets. Note that I do not use the word demonstration or citizen engagement here, but the marketing term footfall, which is defined as the number of people who visit a physical store or location after they have been exposed to content that told them so. Influencer AIs are driven by an untransparent system of interconnected parties trading so-called futures in human behavior or citizen footfall that destabilize our democracies and institutions. So from a security analysis perspective, the target of attack is in fact any of us. Any of us is a target who is exposing him or herself to social media, which inform us about something we then happen to care about. A deepfake. But who are the attackers then? Also, who are the originators that affect whom through AI and for what reason? Here I would like to share another quote from Sun Tzu. Ah, it's not working well. It won't let me do it. So, the quote is, "The wise leader subdues the enemy's troops without fighting. He takes his cities without besieging them. He overthrows his kingdom without extensive operations in the field." In other words, the wise attacker destabilizes the enemy. They destabilize the cities and kingdoms, and so Europe falls without the destabilizers ever going to war effectively. But who are the destabilizers? Now, one might say, yeah, we know that. That's the Russians and the Chinese. And perhaps that's part of the problem. But let's not forget that the biggest destabilizing forces in the Trump and Brexit case were coming from within. Many attackers on our system are all those in our system who are not happy about the system. And these are many. So one of our ultimate goals for peace and for AI design must be to appease those who are unhappy right in front of our eyes, in our own organizations and in our countries, to regain harmony, to work on what is good, to reduce the ubiquitous spread of hate, to take the wind out of the sail of those who hate the system. And this must be our goal. And let me now finish with a fine, and this, the way I do this in my daily work is basic by promoting value-based engineering. Let me finish with a final quote from Sun Tzu. "A wise attacker is one whose opponent does not know what to defend, and a wise defender is one where the opponent does not know where to attack." Right now, the destabilizers know very well where to attack. They just take the powers of data management platforms combined with social media. And so our own way to stop this incredible disruption of our democratic societies in light speed, is to do one thing. We have to break the power of the social media networks. We have to break that power, which means that we have to somehow, I'm not saying that we stop using any of that technology, but we have to re-regionalize it, we have to de-monopolize it, we have to have clear name authentication on those networks, re-create accountability and regain control over information flows. If we don't do that, if you don't do that, we'll just be part of a devastating wave. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Sarah. That was really deeply concerning. I would nearly say it's scary, but I think it's really important to face the true and the real data so we could prepare for that, especially for your final words about draining the social media and their impact as a mother of two teenagers. I can definitely say how important it is. And now we move on to the next speaker, who is Mr. Christian Bartolin. He holds an MA degree in law from the University of Copenhagen. He currently serves as the head of the Digital Development Unit and the secretary, and he is also the secretary of the Committee and Artificial Intelligence on Artificial Intelligence of the Council of Europe. Before he joined the Council of Europe team, he held positions in the Ministry of Interior and the Ministry for Refugee, Immigration and the Integration Affairs, as well as the Asylum Department and International Affairs Department in the Danish government. Please, Mr. Bartolin, the floor is yours.
Thank you very much, Excellencies, ladies and gentlemen. Let me begin by thanking the OSCE and the OSCE Parliamentary Assembly for the invitation to speak today. It is a great honor for me to address you on the topics of security in the age of artificial intelligence and on the topic of this particular session on how to protect democracy and promote development through artificial intelligence. These are topics which largely revolve around our ability to harness new and emerging digital technologies for the good of society, to further innovation and growth without compromising our rights and the basic ideas around which our societies are built. The last couple of years have witnessed a truly impressive increase in the capacities of artificial intelligence systems and a just as impressive democratization of the technology. Anyone with access to a computer or a smartphone, for that matter, can make use of various forms of AI systems, such as large language models or other forms of generative AI, and create content. AI comes with great promise for innovation in science, in education, in healthcare, in business, in administration, and it is likely to revolutionize how we interact and communicate with each other. But AI also comes with a darker side. It may be used to undermine democratic processes, including by spreading lies and fake news. It can be used for surveillance purposes, to control the population and marginalize any political protest. It may be biased in decision making and lead to breaches of human rights. Let me underline that it is not the technology per se that poses these problems. We should not fear the algorithms, but we should be wary of how and in which context they are being developed and used. Therefore, the Council of Europe, in close cooperation with its like-minded partners in Europe and beyond, and that includes, of course, the OSCE, has elaborated a new framework convention on artificial intelligence and human rights, democracy, and the rule of law. In 2019, the Council of Europe set up a committee to examine the need and feasibility of regulating AI in international law. This committee, which was called CAHAI with an acronym, issued a feasibility study in 2020, concluding that such a need indeed existed. In 2021, the CAHAI also issued a document outlining the main elements that could be included in a legally binding treaty on AI and human rights, democracy, and the rule of law. In 2022, the CAHAI was replaced by a new committee on AI, now called CAI, which was instructed by the Committee of Ministers to establish an international negotiation process for the purpose of elaborating inter alia a legally binding treaty on AI. On the 14th of March 2024, so not such a long time ago, the CAI successfully finalized the negotiations of a draft framework convention on artificial intelligence and human rights, democracy and the rule of law. In addition to the member states of the organization, Argentina, Australia, Canada, Costa Rica, the Holy See, Israel, Japan, Mexico, Peru, the United States of America, and Uruguay all participated in the negotiations. From our own side, as you know, we have also a parliamentary assembly, and this parliamentary assembly made an important contribution through its representative in the CAI, Mrs. Erversdottir, who will speak later today. The European Union also, of course, participated on behalf of its member states, as AI, due to the AI Act, is a European Union competency. And around 70 representatives of civil society, industry, academia, and international and regional organizations also contributed to the shaping of this new treaty to make the process as participatory and inclusive as possible. The treaty has been adopted by the Committee of Ministers on the 17th of May 2024, so last Friday, and will be open for signature and ratification in Vilnius, Lithuania, on the 5th of September 2024. It is our hope that this, the world's first international treaty on AI, will in due time become the global standard for regulating the development and use of AI systems in human rights, democracy, and rule of law sensitive contexts. The principles contained in the Framework Convention are applicable to both public and private sector AI systems. These principles include respect for human dignity and individual autonomy, transparency and oversight, accountability and responsibility, equality and non-discrimination, privacy and personal data protection. And the last one is reliability and safe innovation. The Framework Convention does not create new human rights specific to AI, but it ensures that all existing human rights will also prevail in situations where an AI system is involved in taking or informing decisions. The Convention also obliges parties to provide for the possibility of issuing moratoria or bans on AI systems which constitute threats to human rights or democracy and the rule of law, and where these threats cannot be mitigated in any other way. Finally, I have to also, of course, say that this new convention is not applicable to purely military uses of AI systems, as such military uses fall outside of the mandate of the Council of Europe. But these are, as you know, also dealt with in other contexts, such as United Nations, where the laws process is ongoing in Geneva. The challenges that the AI technology poses to society cannot be meaningfully addressed at domestic or even regional levels only. To be efficient, there must be a global legal framework, creating a level playing field for all relevant actors across regions and providing for international cooperation. This is exactly what the Council of Europe's Framework Convention offers. It is often alleged that regulation constitutes a hindrance for technological innovation and the resulting economic growth. This is, however, manifestly not the case if the regulation in question is sufficiently targeted and calibrated. On the contrary, such regulation may rather improve the chances of economic growth because it favors responsible innovation and allows for societies to make use of the technology without having to fear unintended consequences in the form of abuse and misuse by the state or by a private entity. We are facing a digital divide globally, and the uneven access to AI technology across the world's various regions, as well as the uneven protection against abuse and misuse, makes this problem even more important to address now and in the future. It is our aim with the Framework Convention to contribute to the bridging of this divide. Let me end this presentation by underlining my belief that new and emerging digital technologies, such as AI, will ultimately prove to be of benefit for humanity. AI technology offers economic and scientific development to societies across the globe. But as humanity, we must at the same time beware of the temptation to uncritically rely on the technology. Above all, we must not let ourselves be seduced by the capacities offered by the technology. AI technology, used responsibly, benefits us. Used irresponsibly, it may contribute to undermining our human rights, democratic processes, and the rule of law. In short, our security. Thank you for your attention.
Thank you, Mr. Bartolin. And the next speaker on our list is dear Irene Harambidis. She is the head of the Cyprus delegation to the OECPA and serves as a vice president of the Assembly since 2021. She currently serves as the chairperson of the House Standing Committee on Human Rights and Equal Opportunities for Men and Women in the House of Representatives of the Republic of Cyprus. So, dear Irene, the floor is yours.
Thank you. First of all, let me congratulate the organizers, my colleagues, the delegation from Portugal, Paula. It's an amazing city, it's an amazing conference. Thank you for inviting us all here for such an important conference. Thank you. Also, my compliments to the speakers that they have spoken till now. I will keep it short. As a politician, I always keep it short. So, my dear colleagues, ladies and gentlemen, today, many of us have come together to discuss a new era driven by artificial intelligence. Despite the numerous benefits we enjoy from AI, we must not forget the other side of the coin. AI has potential to be a threat to justice, particularly as a new means of corruption. Corruption, that age-old phenomenon that has damaged nations and institutions, now finds new possibilities for exploitation in the sphere of artificial intelligence. The rapid integration of AI into our daily lives, from automated decision-making systems to predictive algorithms, opens the door for ruthless individuals to manipulate these technologies for their own gain. Corruption in the age of AI knows no boundaries. With access to data, individuals can manipulate algorithms to their will, whether through biased decision making or the dissemination of falsehoods. Moreover, the unclear nature of many AI systems complicates accountability, as complex algorithms hide behind technical terminology, shielding their manipulators from scrutiny. Furthermore, the potential for AI to intensify existing inequalities is undeniable. As AI systems learn from historical data, they risk perpetuating the biases and injustices that have long damaged our society, deepening divides and eroding trust. However, in this era of uncertainty, there is hope. We have the tools and knowledge to harness the transformative potential of AI for the greater good. But this requires a concerted effort from all stakeholders, governments, businesses, civil society, and scientists, to prioritize ethics and integrity in the development and deployment of AI technologies. Transparency must be our guiding principle. We must demand greater openness in AI systems, from the algorithms themselves to the data they are trained on. Only through transparency we can ensure accountability and protect against the subtle influence of corruption. Moreover, we must establish robust regulatory frameworks to govern the use of AI. ensuring that these technologies serve the public interest rather than the interests of a privileged few. This includes measures to prevent the abuse of AI for malicious purposes and safeguards to protect individual rights. Education is also key. We must equip the next generation with the knowledge and skills to navigate the complexities of AI, fostering a culture and digital knowledge and critical thinking that empowers individuals to question, challenge, and resist corruption wherever it may arise. In this endeavor, international cooperation is paramount. The OSCE Parliamentary Assembly stands as a solid forum for the exchange of experiences and best practices in combating the negative use of AI for corruption or organized crime. With over 50 member states, the OSCE and OSCPA provide a platform for collaboration in preventing corruption through AI, enabling countries to share insights and strategies for addressing organized crime in the OSCE region. As parliamentarians, it is our duty to lead this fight. We must work tirelessly to present laws that combat corruption and organized crime facilitated by AI, motivating countries to cooperate closely in educating institutions on algorithms for preventing these crimes. In conclusion, while the challenges posed by corruption in the age of AI are overwhelming, they are not impossible. Let us harness the power of AI for advancing technology while organizing ourselves in a joint effort against those who seek to misuse it for personal gain. Together, let us build a future where integrity prevails and the transformative potential of AI is harnessed for the progress of all. Thank you for your attention. Thank you, Paula, once more. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Irene. Hearing all these risks and traps that we as politicians are exposed to, I wonder, it will require more and more courage to engage in politics and in public life. Now, the last of our speaker is Dr. Ricardo Baptista Leite. He is a CEO of HealthIE, the global agency for responsible AI in health, a non-profit foundation based in Geneva, with a mission of creating a global regulatory network capable of fostering the responsible use of artificial intelligence for health in collaboration with the World Health Organization. Please, Ricardo, the floor is yours.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and good morning. Good morning. Good morning. Come on, give me something back, please. We're talking about robots and artificial intelligence all morning, and we have to bring in the human connection. If we do not do what we're doing to be able to serve our fellow humans around the world and humanity at large, we're not doing here anything. And I would like to bring that component of compassion and humanity back into the discussion, especially as we are talking about health. I am greatly honored to be in the Portuguese Parliament, where I was elected to serve for 4 times in the past. And I'm very grateful to my esteemed colleague and friend, the Honorable Paula Cardoso, for her invitation, and of course to the Parliamentary Assembly of the OSCE. And also to say that I am the founder and president of the Unite Parliamentarians Network for Global Health, which is a network of current and former parliamentarians in more than 110 countries. And for those of you interested in global health, feel free to reach out to me over lunch and during the afternoon. But I'm here today to speak as CEO of Health AI, the global agency for responsible AI and health. We are a nonprofit based in Geneva, working with the World Health Organization, where we are precisely trying to address many of the challenges that have been mentioned throughout the morning, and hopefully presenting concrete solutions, on governments, for governments and multilateral organizations to address these challenges, but also to ensure that private corporations can ensure responsible application of artificial intelligence is put to the service of the people. We heard the question in the first panel, how do we solve this problem? How do we regulate AI? And so, looking at the market, we know this is, we're down a path that is not going to turn around. I mean, just in healthcare, 2022, the market was over 10 billion US dollars. We're seeing a market that will be worth nearly half a trillion US dollars in 8 years from now. And we can see the number of startups that are popping up. The US is one of the dominating countries, of course. In Southeast Asia, we see India. We know China also has an important rise of numbers, although they're not visible because of the lack of data. And Europe, we're starting to see a rise, but as was said in the first panel, we are lagging behind. But we always talk about these three blocks. But as Europeans, we also should consider the absolute absence of the Global South in this discussion. When we look at this map, Latin America, Sub-Saharan Africa, and many of the low middle income countries in Asia Pacific are absolutely absent. And so we many times hear artificial intelligence as having the potential of being the greatest equalizer, but it actually has the potential also, if we do not get the regulations right, to be one of the greatest dividers of our time. And when we look at patents, we see, and patents are a good proxy of what to expect in years to come. We see that we are seeing a doubling of patents being put into the market year on year. And everybody talks about the US. US has 21% of the patents. 61% come from China. And so we know that the geopolitical tensions of the future are going to be intertwined with artificial intelligence. And this is something that being a security conference needs to be addressed. When talking about specifically healthcare, when we look at the trends just last year, AI has been developing in every sector, from healthcare analytics to robotics to precision medicine and genomics. You name it, you can see AI solutions in every field. And when we look at the four big tech companies, all of them are investing heavily in artificial intelligence. Google, Microsoft, and Amazon, each one are investing in developing their own virtual scribe. A virtual scribe, you all have phones in your hands. You know Siri or Alexa. This is basically putting a Siri in the doctor's office, collecting all of the information so that everything is collected at the end of the doctor's appointment. The doctor doesn't have to write anything. Everything is written for them. The prescriptions come out. The diagnostic tools are prescribed. And that saves a lot of time and has a tremendous advantage if you think about it. In the UK, 70% of the time a patient is in a doctor's office with their GP, with their family doctor, 70% of the time they're looking at the back of a screen. So that human connection is not there because the doctor is looking at the keyboard instead of looking at the patient. So this has tremendous potential. But at the same time, we understand the risks. And we understand what we've been hearing all morning, how this type of data collection of highly sensitive data can also be used by bad actors. But more than that, from a security perspective, all of the data in hospitals in Europe are on clouds, or at least the ones that are digitalized. All clouds are basically, I would say 99% of hospitals in Europe are on one of three clouds, Microsoft, Google, or Amazon, and these are three US companies. I wonder how Europe has been able to evolve in a way that we weren't able to create our own cloud platform to be used by our own public institutions. And this raises many security issues also. But this study was actually presented by one of the speakers in the previous panel, which I found it quite interesting, and I want to reinforce this information. Basically, it was a chatbot where patients and doctors were talking on this digital chatbot, but half of the answers were given by real doctors, but the other half were given by robots. And the truth is, the health outcomes for the patients was much better with the robots. That, I think, is easy to understand. But what is harder for us as humans to understand is that when we ask the patients, Who was nicer? Who showed more empathy? The robots showed more empathy than the doctors. This tells us two things, that those doctors were not Portuguese like my colleagues. No, but most importantly, it shows that we are moving into a new age, an age in which the truth is robots don't get tired, robots don't feel the urge for lunch like we are feeling right now. They're consistent. And the truth is, in medical schools, for example, and nursing schools, we're training healthcare professionals of the future to memorize, to be robots. And if we're teaching them to be robots, one thing I can assure you is in the future, they are going to lose against the robots. And so we need to rethink the way we do our training so that we can rethink the positioning of the human in this new ecosystem that is AI-empowered. And so how do we use the power of humanity to enhance the power of the system as a whole? And we hear now rumors that Apple will be signing a deal with OpenAI, the creators of ChatGPT. There are also rumors of negotiations happening with Google Gemini. Whatever happens, Apple will probably move forward the current Siri model that is pretty outdated. Will move towards a conversational large language model. And this will be transformational. I don't know if you've used already the new ChatGPT 4.0 and seen its potential of using video and image and multimodalities. It can be transformational, and this is putting that power of technology at the hand of every citizen, which has advantages, but once again, we need to create the framework to fix it. And we heard a lot of the word fear. And I must tell you, when I took on my role as CEO at HealthAI, we conducted a survey with legislators, technology companies, academics, patient organizations, and the word that came out most related to artificial intelligence and health was the word fear. And it was a fear stemmed by not knowing how to regulate, fear of the potential harm, fear of not understanding the technology. But also we need to embrace what the technology can do. And when we look at how AI is evolving today, we see that it's already being used for diagnostic support. If you're doing a CT scan or an MRI, most probably the report will be AI delivered. You're already seeing genomic sequencing used, for example, for personalized treatment. We're already seeing predictive analytics being used, for example, to manage hospital waiting lists. That is already happening today, or to understand how many beds we need available in hospitals. And we're already seeing patients being sent home so they can be monitored from the hospital, but being staying at home. That is happening today. In the future, we're already seeing prospective applications of population management, which means that we can change the current broken disease-driven models of healthcare to be more focused on health and well-being. And so using the power of AI analytics to make sure that we prevent diseases more efficiently, that we detect diseases earlier to ensure better prognosis. But we're also seeing accelerated drug discovery, new drugs being put into the market faster and cheaper, being able to treat diseases that today are not treatable. Augmented reality to train healthcare professionals, or virtual reality and application of AI and robotics to do AI-assisted surgeries, which will allow us to be much more precise and even to ensure surgeries in regions where we don't have healthcare professionals. And virtual assistants, which I've already spoken about. And I'll share these slides. I just want to show this to show you that AI is popping up across the whole value chain of healthcare. And all AI solutions are either leading to better outcomes when it comes to health, or with a purpose of lowering costs, and sometimes a combination of both. So there is tremendous potential there. The issue is the fragmented regulatory landscape. This was mentioned many times in the first panel. We're ending up with a highly divided world. We have the EU Act, we have President Biden's executive order, and then you have every country moving forward, or at least high-income country, moving forward with their own form of regulation. And then when you go to low-income countries, many times I've meeting with regulators all across Africa and Latin America, where sometimes they don't even have one person who is trained in AI within their regulatory bodies. And so how do we deal with this fragmentation is a big issue. And the truth is, we are seeing a technology that evolves fast. You are parliamentarians. Let's be honest. Parliaments cannot keep up to pace with AI. What parliaments need to do is delegate the responsibility to regulators so they can regulate and keep up to speed. We need light legislation and we need effective regulation. Global harmonization is critical, finding a minimum bar that everyone can follow. Data concerns is very important. We're talking about security. We haven't mentioned yet quantum computing. But the rise of quantum will deem all of our privacy mechanisms in hospitals, clinics, and public institutions completely obsolete. And we have to advance quickly. The financial sector is investing tens of billions to try to keep up to speed with quantum. Public institutions are doing practically nothing in this space. And post-market surveillance. It's not just making sure that we regulate and say the technology is safe today, but how do we make sure that we monitor it after the technology is put into the market? So we have this need to fix governance, and I'm coming close to my time, so I'm going to speed up just to see how we are addressing it at Health AI. We looked at the example of thalidomide. This was a drug that was given to pregnant women in the 1950s to avoid vomiting and nausea. The thing is, this was in an age of pre-regulation, and it led to more than 10,000 babies being born with birth defects. The tragedy was the babies being born like that, many babies died. The silver lining, though, was that this led to a new age of regulation. And today, nobody questions what is a clinical trial. Nobody questions the current process of approving access to market for pharmaceutical products. And so we said, why don't we do something similar for artificial intelligence? Looking at the whole machine learning life cycle and looking at post-market surveillance, how do we put in place a similar mechanism? And so when computers deal with your health, who deals with the computers? And that's where we want to position ourselves as the global agency for responsible AI and health. And we're already working with several governments in the room. I see Norway, Finland, Canada, New Zealand, Singapore. And we're hoping many more countries will join our efforts. The UK, too, has joined us. And the way we've positioned ourselves is right in the middle, as you can see here. We're an implementing partner. With WHO, with the World Health Organization, with OECD, with UNESCO, and we help interpret and basically translate international standards to the local context, and we support through technical assistance the local regulators so that they are able to build the teams to validate AI solutions for their own health systems. And so basically we work on four pillars. One is building these regulatory mechanisms and certifying the regulators. The second thing is to connect the different health AI regulators, health AI certified regulators into one global regulatory network. This global regulatory network will be able to put in place something we're very excited about, which is a global early warning system. So if there's an AI tool with the potential of causing harm that is detected in Indonesia, or in Brazil, or in Switzerland, every agency around the world gets a red flag. And this allows us to put a safety brake, stop using that technology, and try to fix it. And creating with the World Health Organization a repository of all of the AI solutions as they are validated, so everyone can see on that repository what technologies are out there and who has validated them at the regulatory level. And we've created a health AI community of practice that we've just launched that basically any institution can. Let me just put that back there. So if you want to check the link. Basically, this community of practice is an organization that has no cost to apply. Any institution can apply, be it a parliament, a government, an academic center, a technology company, a patient organization. And in this community of practice, we want to foster this global discussions so we have a bottom-up approach so that we can take the insights of those on the ground that have to deal with the technology or are beneficiaries of the technology so that we can convey that bottom-up message to the United Nations, to the multilateral organizations, and so that together we can build up an ecosystem that fosters innovation while ensuring the safety for everyone, and most importantly, ensuring better health for all. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ricardo, for your speech, but it was easier for you since you are a former MP and this was your home playing ground. So I guess this was not your first speech here in this room. The next step will be the debate. I guess you are all looking forward to it. Unfortunately, we will follow the same pattern as it was the previous session. So I will please every person who wants to engage in the discussion to raise his or her hand and to have at least only 2 minutes, so we can have a lot of questions. And unfortunately, I forgot my glasses, and I cannot see you properly. Fortunately, I have Marco with me, who will observe you and give me the list of all persons who want to ask the first questions. And I suppose you are all in good spirits, even though I don't see you. And you are eager to pose your tricky questions and comment on this interesting topic. So please, Marco, who is the luckiest one, the delegation of France.
Thank you, honorable delegates, distinguished guests. Thank you to I'm delighted to that the OSCE Parliament Assembly is organizing a conference on this important matter. Firstly, I would like to point out that AE is in and of itself is neither an opportunity nor a danger. Like all technologies, its values depend on how it is used. However, if misused, it can lead to the violation or virtuality of fundamental rights. As artificial intelligence rapidly advances, so do the opportunities and the risks. If we are not to make the most of AI and mitigate the risk, the answer lies in the international cooperation and good intelligence between countries. Why? Because many risks arising from AI and inherently international in nature. I'm delighted that there is international awareness of this issue. The European Union is the home stretch before the adoption of the regulation on AI, an innovative text that protects without restricting innovation. Last November, at the invitation of our British friends, 28 countries worked together on this issue of the security of the AI. The Bletchley Declaration, which results from this summit, is a clear call for greater cooperation and to guarantee the safety of AI. I would like to quote a small passage from this statement. I say, all actors have a role to play in ensuring the safety of AI. Nations, international forum, and other initiatives, companies, civil society, and academia will need to work together. End of citation. In today's international context, we must, of course, welcome the technology advances that AI represents, but we must also ensure that we defend the interests of individuals, protect our value, and defend democracy. We will protect democracy by watching out for foreign influences spreading false information to sway elections. We will protect people and our value by ensuring the AI becomes a tool to serve us and not a tool to do without others. It is moral duty as well as necessity to have a fair development of AI so that the solution and development benefits everyone. I thank you for your attention and I look forward to our continued cooperation on this matter. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Next in our list is a representative of the Council of Europe Parliamentary Assembly from Iceland.
Thank you. My name is Sunna Ævarsdóttir. I'm a rapporteur on the opinion of the Assembly on the draft framework convention that my colleague just described to you, Mr. Bartolin. And I found it incredibly important to listen to Sara Spiegelman's intervention and addressing the need to disrupt the social media companies and their way of doing business. And I find it remarkable that this is really, you know, the the first point in which it was addressed, because it's one of the main challenges that we have, the state of surveillance capitalism that we've allowed to grow and fester and attack our democratic societies. What I've noticed is an unwillingness to really talk about it or address it. It's not the subject matter of any of our regulatory talks, but what is the crux of the issue is the ownership of these AI tools, the ownership of these automations that we have access to today. So in order to deal with the threats that AI poses to our society, to democracy, to the rule of law, we have to deal with the ownership model of these systems. So we have to revisit the idea of ownership and who has the right to benefit from these systems, because if we're not careful, and we're not being careful, what will happen is a level of inequality that we will not even have been able to imagine so far, that we will end up with some sort of techno-feudalism where very few, very big powers that belong in private hands will own everything, and workers who have been made obsolete and unnecessary by automations have no negotiating power, no bargaining power, no ability to demand their rights through strikes, for example. I mean, what are you going to strike on if you don't have a job to strike from? So why, I guess, is my question to the panelists, are we not addressing the elephant in the room, which is the right to benefit from AI? And don't we, as responsible legislators, need to address this very pressing concern? Thank you.
Thank you very much. Since this is a debate, I think maybe it's better to give a floor now to Sarah, because maybe the question, maybe you were addressed in the question. So please respond to our speaker.
I guess I have to give the question back. Why is the elephant in the room not discussed? I have one hypothesis. We are all sitting right in the elephant, and we are all part of a wave of information that a trip that puts our attention into a direction where we should not look, which is to disrupt the elephant.
Thank you. Now I give a floor to Irene from Cyprus.
Question. First of all, I would like to comment on something. We have similar issues with cryptocurrencies. We didn't have legislation to handle the situation. Cryptocurrencies was a fact with limited knowledge and legislation to control. And I don't think until now we have managed to do anything when it comes to that. So, artificial intelligence. I have a question for Sarah. I'm a journalist. I used to be a journalist before entering politics. And also I chair the Human Rights Commission. So I'm a bit sensitive when it comes to freedom of speech and human rights. And you mentioned social media and the need for legislation in order to control this environment in a way to deal with fake news and AI interventions and things like that. But at the same time, there is a huge risk of making a step further and limit the freedom of speech, the freedom of people to express themselves. So it's a thin line between handling the situation when it comes to social media and having inadequate legislation when it comes to that. I'm a bit skeptical. Yeah.
Yes, please, Sarah, can you respond to that?
I see your point, but I think we have to distinguish between a freedom of speech and a freedom of reach. Yeah? And the freedom of reach was not granted. It was the freedom of speech. That is one thing. The second thing is, what I am calling for is not that we get rid of social media or the ability to discuss with each other online and to hook up with other people, real people, but to hook up with artificial intelligences and to be exposed to manipulation. So to Mr. Bartolin, who said the technology is not the problem. I would oppose that to some extent and want to make it more finer. The technology design is the problem. We can build social technologies in a wonderful way, in a value-based way, and then we would get rid of manipulation and artificial intelligences and fake. That's a problem.
Yeah. That's true. Now I give the floor to Greece and then to United Kingdom.
Thank you very much. Dear colleague, I would like to underline some crucial points regarding the issue of security of the age of artificial intelligence. It is extremely important that the fact that within the OASE, the official representative of the Organization for the Security and Cooperation in Europe on Freedom of Media, Mrs. Ribeiro, take the initiative in the impact of artificial intelligence, particularly on freedom of expression. The proposal is to draft policy proposals for safeguarding freedom of expression and media pluralism against commercial and state interests promoted through the issue for artificial intelligence tools. In 2021, a policy handbook titled Spotlight on Artificial Intelligence and Freedom of Expression was published, containing proposals for safeguarding human rights when artificial intelligence is issued in the development and management of online content. At the international level, although it falls outside the mandate of the OASE, the recent adoption on March 11 by the United Nations General Assembly of a resolution titled Sizing the Opportunity of Safe, Secure, and Trustworthy Artificial Intelligence System for Sustainable Development is noted. This marks the first ever international decision on the issue of artificial intelligence. The United States that took the initiative for the decision of March 11 emphasized that it draws inspiration from the fundamental rights of the United Nations, such as the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, and aims to create a global consensus for safe and reliable artificial intelligence system, building capabilities and bringing the digital divide. Closing, I would like to underline that we, as a Hellenic delegation, express our hope that this will contribute to future relevant initiatives such as the Global Digital Compact and the work of the United Nations Secretary General's Advisory Board on Artificial Intelligence to promote dialogue among states, civil society, and academic community, the public, and the private sector, which my country, Greece, welcome and will participate in with ever available means. Thank you for the attention.
Thank you. Now I give the floor to our British delegation.
Thank you very much. It's a very stimulating and interesting debate so far today that we've had. I think one of the areas for me which is the most concern is that there are, of course, people out there that want to do harm and spread hate through social media and etc. But I'm afraid the most dangerous words in the English language, as Ronald Reagan said, was, I'm here from the government, I'm here to help. Now, it's not just these big bad actors that are the problem. It is also well-meaning government that tries to impose itself and be a moral arbiter on social media and try and close down discord and debate. And often is the case that when things happen which we don't like, we call for more regulation in order to stifle that debate too. And the examples earlier given of Trump and Brexit, I think sometimes there is a comfortable metropolitan liberal establishment in the world which looks at these issues and thinks there's a way around it through regulation rather than challenging a new consensus which is going on. And I think that we need to look at that through that prism. And I think something that the Vice President Irene said about equipping people with the skills to challenge and to explore and to look at things which they could find hurtful is a much more better way than doing it, than maybe closing down debate. And just one further point I wanted to make on the back of Ricardo's presentation, which I thought was very interesting, was the idea of global harmonisation. Whilst I can see the attraction to it, I often find that the furthest away decision-making goes from the people, it often finds the biggest levels of distrust. It creates a void and it creates a democratic deficit. And there has to be a way we try and challenge that and do that at the same time of being able to harmonise policy too.
Yeah. Thank you very much. Is there anybody else who wants to pose some tricky question? I cannot see anybody, so I let our speakers to answer these questions, maybe. Ricardo, I'm sorry for that.
Well, thank you. And it has been an interesting debate, but I would like to challenge back the honorable gentleman from the United Kingdom, whose remark I couldn't agree more with, where the idea of having one global entity validating AI tools for the world is something that is outdated and that countries will not accept. The idea of having a Geneva-based or a New York-based organization dictating the rules for the world is part of history. And I think COVID-19 has really accelerated the willingness of governments and of the people to have sovereign solutions to address these challenges. And that's why at Health AI, what we are trying to do is, through technical assistance, build the local regulatory capacity and putting the different regulators together, working together on a common framework where we can find a minimum bar of understanding. It doesn't mean that each country has its own fluctuations and its own adaptations of the way they apply those standards, but at least if we could agree on a minimum bar, that will ensure us at least that the principles of responsible use of artificial intelligence are implied before we actually allow technology to be used in high sensitive areas, as is the case of healthcare. Moreover, if we work each of us as isolated countries on this space, it raises another tremendous challenge, which is the fact that if there's an AI tool that does have the potential to cause harm, it will only be detected too late. And as we've seen here, the problem of AI is the scale and speed at which the positive impact it can have can also be the negative. And so the goal is to have an early warning system at a global level where the regulators working together can identify risks early on, and if one country identifies a risk, that risk is shared with all of the other regulators around the world, allowing everyone to put in safety brakes. And this is in the interest of the private companies too, because it protects them from further legal liability instead of waiting for harm to be happening at scale. And so I think what we need to do is we need to adapt our old regulatory thinking hats to this new technology to design new models. And that's what we're trying to build here. But there are more unanswered questions than answered questions at this point. And that's why we created the community of practice, and that we believe that we need to create more communities of the sort where governments and technology companies and citizens sit together so we can discuss this in an open, democratic manner, and so that we can find solutions that actually address the challenges, so that we can find a model that accelerates innovation, so that we can reap the benefits at the same time that we keep citizens safe. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ricardo. I can see the delegation of Spain who wants to engage in the debate.
Thank you. I wanted just to react once more to the question from Sarah Spiekerman, because it's really inspiring and suggesting the point on the demanding control on social networks. I totally agree of this necessity, but the point is that all developments for the moment for reacting against misusing of artificial intelligence has been based on self-regulation. That means that in 2022, in the European framework, was adopted the Code of Conduct against disinformation, based on the agreement of social networks companies. In fact, lastly, 2 months ago, it was adopted the European regulation on transparency and targeting on political publicity based too on self-regulation. Then I want to ask you about your opinion about this approach, because there are two models, or a preventive or proactive model to react, or a reactive model to safeguard rights on the internet and in face of artificial intelligence. And it's easy to oppose, like we have heard some minutes ago, to oppose censorship or to consider that that social networks can, if they control contents on the contents, then they can be some kind of censorship. Then there is a dilemma about how manage this question. I would like to know more about it. Thanks.
Thank you very much. Maybe Christian would like to respond how he sees it from his point of view, and then Sarah.
Thank you, Sarah. Yes, thank you very much, Madam Chair, and thank you to the question that was just posed here. The question, I think, about who is in control of social media and is, of course, at the end of the day, a basic democratic issue that has to be resolved. I don't think it is specifically linked to the question of the technology that is being used. In this case, we were discussing artificial intelligence. Artificial intelligence I see as a tool, and it can, of course, as was mentioned before, it has the ability or the capacity to do things at much bigger scales and much greater haste than what we have been used to do. And that, of course, in itself can aggravate situations. I have had these discussions many times. I think that we have to take this very, we have to be very, very serious about how we deal with deep fakes, how we deal with lies and half-truths being out there in a democratic debate. Now, human rights actually are quite well protected in general because we have clear legal basis for it. It's something slightly more different with the democracies. Democracy as a form of governance is regulated in democratic states' constitutions, but we don't have an overarching definition of what a democracy is. And so we see states that have systems with multi-party democracies, states with systems with fewer parties participating. They're all democracies, but what they have in common is that they are, all of them, vulnerable to manipulation, ruthless manipulation. And I think what we have to look at is essentially, let's say, if we have an open society, our enemies will always be able to abuse that openness. This is our weak spot that Sarah was also pointing to. This is in the defense. Now, it can be done, of course, for malign purposes in order to destabilize the state. It can also just be done in order to make money. And I think we have to somehow be cautious about how we approach the issue of the role that social media play in this as instruments, how their business model itself can be part of the problem. So this, I think, is something we need to look at. It's independently of whether we are talking about AI or indeed the quantum technology that's coming around the corner as the next big thing. I believe that we have to have these fundamental questions discussed beforehand, and not least, we need also to have a general discussion in our societies about how we use these technologies, what are the dangers they pose, what are the benefits they propose to us. We need to have that overall picture. I think that this is something that has been a bit lacking. Something is not good because it's new or it's technological development. Something is good because we can use it for something.
Sarah, I think you want to, do you want to add your comments on it?
It's interesting that other geopolitical areas are very bullish on their policy making. If you just see how the Americans, the US is now trying to have TikTok ownership being passed over. how you see that the Russians and the Chinese for a long time have decoupled their internet infrastructure and built and their own social media that they can control. Europe is the only region where obviously no strategy and no ambition in that direction is being made. I know it's very difficult, seeing our relationship with the US, it's more difficult for us perhaps than the Chinese and Russians. That said, with Trump coming along, we might rethink our own independent minds and needs to also rethink our infrastructure. I know to what extent that is already politically discussed on many, many levels. Secondly, I think what many people don't realize, I talk a lot to journalists how our free and real world journalists are breaking away. They cannot afford their life anymore. The media houses are breaking down that used to basically still be around. Yeah, and I don't think in 5 years from now, if we don't act, we won't have the good journalists anymore in our nations. That's a real threat. And the third one is, as I say, it's a technology design issue. We're talking about clear name authentication, rigorous authentication towards those networks to get rid of the manipulation by spam bots. I'm talking really about how to build the social networks in a good way. And to, we can also have national or regional cloud centers and manage them under our own co-ownership structures. This is all a matter of business model, political rigor, and courage, and technical design. We have to start thinking about it.
Thank you, Sarah. Some last questions? No. I don't see anybody. Maybe Irene, do you want to use your final words? Irene?
No. Yeah. I just want to say that, you know, politicians have a different way of perceiving things. So because we are all parliamentarians here, I would like to say to my colleagues that it's a very serious issue. And the parties usually, they want to benefit from new technologies, to use them to their own benefit. This is not the case. In this case, we have to think about humanity. And we have to work for the greater good. We have to work for humanity. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Irene. So I would like we used all the time we had, and I think that we are all looking forward to the lunch in the cloister of this beautiful parliament. I want to once again express my great attitude, a great gratitude. This is really difficult to say to all the speakers that adopted our invitations and are personally here with us, sharing their knowledge with us. So please, let's give them a round of applause now. Thank you very much. It was very interesting, and now please enjoy the food and enjoy the lunch.
We will convene at 3 o'clock.
Yes, we will convene here in the 3 p.m.
Yeah. Yeah, you are right.
Thank you, Lucy.
Yeah.
Extremely
well done.
The problem is that there is moderation, but if you want to.